Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Big Bend Sentinel. These articles were published on the Big Bend Sentinel's website on April 22, 2021. District Attorney gives $34,000 in seized funds to Presidio Police Department. 83rd District Attorney Ori White visited the Presidio Police Department on Friday morning to hand off a $34,000 check to Police Chief Margarito Hernandez. The money comes from a pool of $69,000 White seized through a district case involving an individual who was arrested after trying to cross the border into Mexico with $81,000 in undeclared cash. Chief Hernandez said part of the money will go toward funding a new police vehicle, and the rest will be used to purchase bulletproof vests and spike strips. The check amounts to roughly 10% of the department's operating expenses in 2020. "It's nothing to sneeze at," said Brad Newton, the interim city administrator. "We are very grateful." Area hospitals reimbursing wrongly collected fees for COVID-19 vaccines. Two area hospitals are offering to refund patients who paid out-of-pocket administrative fees for COVID-19 vaccines, by Abby Perot. Two area hospitals have stopped charging out-of-pocket fees for COVID-19 vaccine patients who don't have insurance and are offering refunds for wrongly collected payments. This week, Big Bend Regional Medical Center and Pecos County Memorial Hospital issued statements regarding their administrative fees for COVID-19 vaccines, which were against guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In March, Pecos County Memorial Hospital in Fort Stockton posted on Facebook that it was charging a $15 administration fee for the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. That was despite CDC and Texas Department of State Health Services directives that fees could be charged to insurance providers, but not to individuals at the point of service, with the CDC saying providers must administer COVID-19 vaccine at no out-of-pocket cost and cannot deny the vaccine to anyone who is eligible. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services also laid out explicit rules in February, stating that since vaccines were being provided free of cost to vaccinators, vaccine providers are prohibited from charging patients any amount for administration of the vaccine. After the Big Bend Sentinel reported on those charges and the CDC guidelines, some patients at Alpine's Big Bend Regional Medical Center said they also paid administrative fees to receive their vaccine. Since March, both hospitals have reversed course. This week, PCMH Chief Executive Officer Betsy Briscoe said that the large majority of vaccines were charged to insurance companies as allowed. Those who paid out of pocket either requested to pay rather than file with their insurance, offer to pay out of appreciation, or in a few cases, were inadvertently charged, Briscoe said this week. Ruth Huck, a spokesperson for BBRMC, said this week that the Alpine Hospital found that some self-pay patients were mistakenly charged due to an administrative error. "The system error has been corrected, and we have refunded the administration charge for these self-pay patients. Those charged at PCMH were refunded several weeks ago," Briscoe said. "If an individual has questions regarding this, they should call our clinic at 432-336-2291. In Alpine, Huck said if someone has not received their reimbursement, please call 432-837-3447 and ask for Edmar Garcia to correct your mailing address. Subnote: have you been charged a fee to receive a vaccine against coronavirus and had trouble being reimbursed? Reach out to us at editor@bigbensentinel.com to share your experience. Parking lot for trans migrants opens, and with it, an influx of new arrivals. By Maisie Crow. Presidio. "Well, boys, I just arrived at the agency. Hector Pacheco said as he filmed a vast parking lot outside Presidio last week. "This is the American side. Look at everything that's here. A lot of people are going to come." Pacheco had just traveled the 1,100 miles from Utah to Presidio with a vehicle in tow, each car brimming with goods purchased in the U.S. He had arrived at the newly opened parking facility for transmigrants owned by SAD, Servicios Aduanales del Deserto, the Ojinaga Presidio-based brokerage agency with offices on Mexico's southern border. He was eager to report his findings to other transmigrants, posting his video in a Facebook group dedicated to the traveling merchants that resell U.S. goods in their home countries in Central America. He is one of more than 200 transmigrants who have used the Presidio port since its opening in late March, and SAD officials anticipate 200 or more per day in the coming months. Pacheco makes his journey several times a year, and until last week, he had always driven his merchandise through Los Indios, a South Texas town which had the only port of entry to service transmigrant traffic until Mexico authorized transmigrant travel through the Presidio port last month. Pacheco was intrigued by the new route and hoped it would be safe. If he made it to Guatemala without problems, he'd return again. Mexican officials have discussed the new transmigrant since 2017. Customs brokers Yuri Valdez of Ojinaga and Eric Prieto of El Paso, the co-owners of SAD, began working with Mexican government officials in 2018 to get the route approved. It was put into action with the help of Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador and officially opened on March 23rd of this year. On the U.S. side, Presidio officials sought help from the state and federal government to plan for the route and take advantage of potential economic benefits, but those efforts largely came up empty. According to Presidio Mayor John Ferguson, it was nearly impossible to garner support for the city's interest from state or federal officials. City officials were often left to their own devices in determining how to handle the new route. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported in 2019, Presidio Mayor John Ferguson took a fact-finding trip to Los Indios and came back unimpressed, concerned about the potential for increased traffic on U.S. 67. He also worried that, left unregulated, transmigrant parking lots would pop up all over the city. He sent a letter to U.S. and Mexican officials urging them not to pursue a transmigrant corridor at Presidio Ojinaga. The city passed an ordinance in November 2019 to address concerns with a potential new route. It prohibited transmigrants from sleeping in their vehicles and regulated transmigrant parking to city-approved and permitted lots. Initially, the city sought to build a municipally-owned transmigrant parking lot in the city's commercial district. But after a series of heated debates and staunch opposition from H. Cowan, a representative of Solitaire Homes, it never materialized. Citing limited capacity on U.S. Highway 67, the delayed Presidio Ojinaga International Bridge expansion, and a lack of facilities, in March 2020, the city did what they could to stop the route from opening and passed a resolution opposing outbound transmigrant traffic crossing at our Presidio Ojinaga International Bridge for health and safety reasons. Now that it's clear the route is open and transmigrants have arrived, Ferguson says that while there is nothing about the transmigrants' presence that has been anything other than positive, nothing about what the city opposed had really changed. "Our number one concern is the highway traffic," Ferguson said. When Prieto and Valdez set out to build SAD, they found land just outside the city limits. They wanted a facility that not only offered parking for the traveling merchants, but also provided accommodations and kept them entertained and fed while they waited the approximately 72 hours for their paperwork to be approved, including a document of every item being transported, which is checked again upon exiting Mexico. Servicios Aduanales del Deserto is currently the only lot in the region to service incoming transmigrants. "The main objective of this project is to be different from the project in Los Indios," said Guillermo Prieto, administrator and manager of the SAD parking facility project. "We're offering transmigrants a free place, a decent place. Over there in Los Indios, they stay in their cars all night. The facility sits just outside of Presidio on US 67 and boasts ample parking, portable buildings housing 25 rooms, each with two twin beds, and another several buildings that house a commercial kitchen, shower facilities, a game room, and a television lounge. Outside, there are plans for a basketball court and an area for grilling. All of it comes at no extra charge for transmigrants who can use the facility freely. The parking lot will eventually have a perimeter fence and video surveillance, and SAD plans to staff the site with approximately 30 employees. Right now, the lot lacks running water and access to a sewer, something likely to be alleviated in the coming months by an ongoing City of Presidio water improvements project nearby. In the interim, the lot relies on porta-potties and a septic system. For drivers, this route offers other incentives too. If they are coming from the West Coast, they save several hours in travel time to arrive at the port, as well as the money they'd spend on gas and accommodations. Plus, for the time being, it costs around $250 to cross in Presidio, whereas crossing in Los Indios is upwards of $500. Another thing, they are tired of the corruption in the Mexican state of Tamaulipas, Guarmero said. They pay for the broker in the U.S., then they cross the border, and then all through Tamaulipas, state police ask for money. Promising that the new route would be tough on corruption, the federal government in Mexico made a commitment to the safety of transmigrants. We worked with the government to ensure that the new route is secure. It's going to be different from Tamaulipas, he said. The federal government of Mexico even released a promotional video espousing the new route, even saying that the inhabitants of Ojinaga, Camargo, and Jimenez will benefit from the economic outpouring. We already have people that are coming through for their second time, said Guarmero. And in September, October, November, December, we expect 5,000 to 6,000 per week. There's a misunderstanding of transmigrants, Eric said. Many of these people are U.S. citizens. He went on to add, these are people with money. They are buying merchandise in the U.S. to bring through Mexico and sell in Central America. Last week, transmigrant Christian Ayala was waiting in Presidio for longer than he had anticipated. There was a title mix-up with one of the vehicles he had purchased in California, and he was waiting for the correct one to be sent before he could cross. Ayala is currently pursuing his bachelor's degree in business administration and economics online. Some of his time waiting was spent doing homework. It's real nice. I didn't expect this type of room, Ayala said about SAD's facilities. They have the space for me to work on my laptop and everything. Ayala had seen reviews of SAD on Facebook, and some posts had mentioned of a shorter, straighter route. Most importantly, there had been no reports of corruption. For Ayala, that made this route better. There is a promise from the Mexican government. If they see that this project runs well, they are going to close Los Indios, Eric said. Currently, CBP is only allowing transmigrants to cross from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., though Guarmero anticipates that those hours will have to expand once more transmigrants arrive. Currently, travelers line up next to a sign on the shoulder of US 67 in front of Pancho's Pizza, just outside the port of entry, that reads, Transmigrant staging here. According to a spokesperson from TxDOT, CBP is currently responsible for coordinating transmigrant traffic. Their presence in Presidio has been a plus to this point, Ferguson said. But one thing they cannot control is that once they come into town, as they prepare to cross, they have to stop first and wait on the shoulder. They're in communication with the port of entry, he said, and they do it in groups. By contrast, in Los Indios, there is a designated parking lot for transmigrants preparing to cross. We don't have those facilities in Presidio. It's not a big problem, but it potentially could be, and right now we are just kind of improvising, Ferguson said. If it's authorized and it's going to happen, then we need to accommodate everybody as best we can, he said. We didn't ask for this to happen, but we need to be good hosts, he said. We want them to obey our laws as well, but we need to make them feel like they are welcome and not like they are outsiders. When we cross, if everything is good, I'm going to start coming this way, said transmigrant Carlos Rivera as he loaded his vehicle last week. Believe me, this town is going to grow a lot. Rivera plans to post a review of the route on Facebook. Additional reporting by Sachi McClendon. High-speed chase cuts through Marfa and Fort Davis by Sachi McClendon. A high-speed car chase that wound its way through Marfa and Fort Davis on Friday evening ended at the Reeves County line after a deputy used a spike strip to pop the fleeing vehicle's tires on Highway 17. The black Nissan truck managed to get a few more yards before the driver and three other passengers bailed out and escaped into the mountainside, according to Reeves County Sheriff Arturo Art Granado. We sent a drone up and we couldn't find anything, said Granado. We cleared some of the buildings that were there and no one was found, so we had to just stop the search. One of the occupants was found the next day by Border Patrol agents, according to Presidio County Sheriff Danny Dominguez, whose office is handling the statewide investigation. Dominguez said the occupant was interviewed by Border Patrol, but ultimately was not very helpful. U.S. Customs and Border Protection did not respond in time to say whether the occupant was released from custody or referred for prosecution. The pursuit began after the truck steered around a border checkpoint on Highway 67 south of Marfa. Dominguez took the lead on the chase, assisted by officers with the Texas Department of Public Safety and Jeff Davis County Sheriff's Office. This is at least the third high-speed pursuit in the area within the month. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, a chase that began in Monahans last Friday ended in the backyard of Dominguez's own home. In that incident, the occupants bailed from their truck and tried to scale the sheriff's fence. The suspected passenger was detained and then released for lack of evidence, while the suspected driver managed to evade authorities. More and more high-speed chases are happening, said Dominguez, and we are just trying to deal with them as they come. Each one is different. Train hopper detained in Marfa, turned over to Border Patrol. From staff reports. A Union Pacific train out of Uvalde stopped in the middle of town, Marfa, on Thursday after an unauthorized passenger was spotted aboard a freight car. The passenger was detained by a trooper with the Texas Department of Public Safety and then turned over to U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers in Marfa. U.S. Customs and Border Protection did not respond to multiple requests for comment. According to Marfa Police Chief Steve Marquez, authorities were first notified of the train hopper after a resident in Alpine saw him riding on top of a freight car. Once the train came to a stop in Marfa, the DPS trooper, who was called in to assist with the Marfa Police Department, found the passenger hiding between two freight cars. In a statement to the Big Bend Sentinel, a DPS spokesperson said that no one was injured and the train resumed its trip. In the interest of time, I'm going to read one final article in the Big Bend Sentinel, but only a portion of it. This article relates to a story we read last week in the Big Bend Sentinel related to the South Rim fire. Chisos Basin to reopen Friday, from staff reports. Big Bend National Park. With the 1,341-acre South Rim fire at 80% containment and no longer deemed a threat to developed areas, the National Park Service has scheduled the reopening of the park's popular Chisos Basin on Friday, April 23rd at 11 a.m. Visitors will once again be able to enjoy the Chisos Mountain Lodge, store, NPS Visitor Center, Basin Campground, and many popular trails in the Chisos Mountains. This area has been closed to entry since Saturday, April 10th, due to the wildfire which began along the remote south rim of the Chisos Mountains. After 2 weeks of closures, we're glad to be able to open up access to the basin so visitors can enjoy one of Big Bend's most picturesque areas, said Park Superintendent Bob Kroonmaker. Hiking trails that will reopen Friday include the Window Trail, Lost Mine Trail, Basin Loop Trail, Laguna Meadows Trail, Blue Creek Trail, and Dodson Trail. The South Rim fire is not yet out. Hot spots remain and some smoke still lingers. For visitor safety and to allow fire personnel to assess and begin rehabilitation of the burned areas, the South Rim, Emery Peak, and associated trails will remain closed until further notice. the NPS reminds park users that entry into closed areas is unsafe and unlawful. Areas and trails that remain closed are the Pinnacles Trail, Emery Peak Trail, South Rim Trail, East Rim Trail, Boot Canyon Trail, Juniper Canyon Trail, and Colima Trail. Backpacking campsites along the Laguna Meadows and Blue Creek trails will reopen on Monday, April 26. Backcountry permits are required and may be obtained online at www.recreation.gov. We were all worried early in the fire about what harm it might do to the rare plants and animals of the High Chisos, and of course to the infrastructure in the basin, said Krumnaker. The superintendent flew over the fire on Monday and felt very good about what I have seen, he said. The burn pattern is like a mosaic, with more lightly burned areas than intensely burned areas. While the evidence of fire will be visible for years, I expect the vegetation to come back healthier than it was pre-burn. We don't expect any significant impact on wildlife. And of course, the firefighters, the terrain, and the weather collaborated to keep the fire away from the developments in the basin. It's probably going to be a few weeks before the last smoke is out, and there are hazards which need to be mitigated before we can allow public use back in the fire zone. But that's coming soon. I am very grateful to the entire interagency team that worked on this fire, along with the Big Bend National Park staff, Krumnaker said.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, April 15th, 2021. Pickup available for cleanup by Nathan Heuer. This month's county cleanup will provide a pickup service free of charge after a decision made by the county commissioners at Monday's regular meeting. The county will be picking up trash, bulk items such as appliances and mattresses, as well as trash curbside at county resident homes in the next 2 weeks. The pickup started on Monday and will go through Friday, April 30th. If items are not picked up within a week, residents can contact county offices and request their trash to be picked up. Along with appliances, mattresses, and furniture, items will match the city's pickup requirements. Items available for pickup include tree limbs, wood, scrap metal, carpet, and tires. Tires are accepted but must be whole and not have rims on them. For Stockton City Manager Frank Rodriguez, who works with the county by making the city's landfill available, said that the county will take bulk items to their laydown yards until the city's new landfill is complete in October due to the landfill's near full capacity. We accept tree limbs and trash. All the bulk goes to their laydown yards. They're picking up appliances and couches, etc. We're asking them to do that so that we don't overload our landfill. Cuyahoga Community Center bid accepted. The county commissioners also accepted a bid for the new Cuyahoga Community Center on Monday after drawing approximately $600,000 from their fund balance. The county had to draw the funds from their rainy day fund due to the fact of a shortfall of pilot payment from solar farms in the county due to the pandemic. It was declared an emergency and we made the money transfer from out of the fund balance into our budget, Judge Joe Schuster said. The low bid accepted from FLECO came in at $1,297,510, which included three alternates to the job. The alternates include millwork added to the south wall of the community room, new Ansel hood system and gas range, and polished concrete in lieu of stained concrete. The $600,000 is an insignificant reduction in the county's fund balance, according to the Schuster, as the fund has over $10 million in it. The county judge added that the facility, which will provide a location for gas companies to have meetings, as well as an area for residents to have community events, will be done before the end of the year. City Workers Receive Stipend by Nathan Heuer. In an effort to retain employees and for superior performances throughout the unprecedented pandemic this past year, Fort Stockton City Council approved a one-time stipend of $1,200 for full-time city employees on April 13th at the Council's regular meeting. This stipend is intended to retain personnel and remain in direct competition with companies who are offering improved wages. Our employees have done a fantastic job, especially since the pandemic. They help keep our cities safe and our utilities operational, City Manager Frank Rodriguez stated. The city will pay their 114 full-time employees the amount in a separate check on April 16th. The passing of the stipend on Tuesday marks the third consecutive year the city has decided to do so. Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander added that the amount was budgeted, and in the past few years it has proven to keep valuable employees. It's something we budget since we had funds coming in to our people. We wanted to continue to retain our hardworking employees. The city always awarded a bid for their new, also awarded a bid for their new landfill roadways to AG Oilfield Service, Inc., based in Fort Stockton. The bid came in at $225,000. The bid was one of three finalists chosen out of nine companies who submitted bids. The amount provided in-depth information on work involved in the project, cost, exclusions, requirements, and other conditions. Onyx Contractors out of Midland and Harding Earthworks out of San Angelo were the other two finalists. Joe Chris Alexander. Age 61, born Fort Stockton, Texas, occupation, self-employed, president of Direct Bites, LLC, DBA Charisma Car Wash. Current offices and boards, mayor of Fort Stockton for 6 years, Fort Stockton Conventions and Visitors Board of Directors, Fort Stockton Recreation Department Board of Directors, appointed special commissioner by District Judge Gomez, Board of Directors for the Fort Stockton Community Theater, Board of Directors for the Permian Basin Regional Planning Commission, Midland College WRTTC LEA Advisory Board, the Police Academy. Former offices, boards, and appointments. City Council of Fort Stockton for 5 years. Board of Directors for the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce, Vice President of Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce, appointed to the Community Justice Council by District Judge Gomez, Board of Directors Uptown Downtown Association, Board of Directors Friends of the Fort, Board of Directors the Water Carnival Association, Board of Directors Fort Stockton Rotary Club, President Leadership Fort Stockton. Education, graduated from Fort Stockton High School in 1978. Studied business management at Texas A&M University, Texas Department of Insurance Group, One Life, and Health Insurance Licensed. Specialized licensing for the Series 6 and 63 Securities and Mutual Funds with New York Life Insurance Company. State of Texas Fire Marshal, Pyrotechnic Special Effects Operator. Military service, none. Years living in Fort Stockton, 54. Charitable volunteer work. Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce, Leadership Fort Stockton, Lay Director for Kairos Prison Ministry, Lay Director for Walk to Emmaus, Northside Church Leadership, and audio-video engineer, former member of Rotary International, former member of JC's International, Keep Historic Fort Stockton Beautiful, Big Bend Open Road Race, 4th of July Fireworks, Display for the City of Fort Stockton, Chairperson for Toys for Tots, Water Carnival Audio Engineer and Volunteer for 32 years, Grace for Vets at Car Washes every Veterans Day. Why do you believe you should be elected? I'm seeking re-election as mayor to continue the progress on the multiple issues still facing our city. The City Council sets priorities that must get done to keep our city functioning. Water. Priority one was getting all aspects of our water system upgraded and into the 21st century, replacing pipelines, well connections, and updating the RO system, and holding tanks proved a life-saving during the freeze earlier this year. Fort Stockton was not without water during this event, unlike more than half the state that had no water or was under a boil water notice. Landfill. Priority two was getting a replacement landfill approved and closing the old unit. This project is very close to being completed. Had we not acted when we did, the city would have been forced to haul trash to Odessa, raising rates on everyone. Wastewater treatment plant. Priority three was getting the city treatment plants upgraded to stay in compliance with TCEQ. Both plants are in the final stages of being completed. This past fall, the council bought $1.1 million of equipment to resurface streets. Now that the weather has warmed up, resurfacing has begun. Our water, gas, and sewer departments all continue replacing old lines under the streets, and once completed, the street department goes to work resurfacing. During 2020, I worked daily with county, state, and federal officials to deal with the COVID pandemic. During this time, the city gave back over $500,000 of city water bills during COVID to help Fort Stockton citizens. Weekly PSAs were held to update Fort Stockton citizens. Moving forward, we have a plethora of projects underway besides the above listed priorities. Downtown revitalization includes the Springhurst Hotel and the old police department or bank building renovations. Stockton Plaza renovations are ongoing. I am trying to bring in new restaurants and retail stores. My 39 years of business knowledge and experience have assisted the city in all of the above mentioned. I still believe you must serve your community before you can lead it. As mayor, I always strive to show respect and be as approachable as I was before becoming mayor. I thank you for your prayers, your support, and your vote. Mary Ann Terrazas White, age 61. Born Fort Stockton, occupation, retired from FSISD, 22 years of service, current offices and boards, none, former offices and boards, none, education, graduated from Fort Stockton High School, associate's degree in education, military service, none, years living in Fort Stockton, 25, charitable volunteer work. I'm a member of Our Lady of Guadalupe. My service to Our Lady of Guadalupe includes many duties. I'm a Eucharistic minister and a member of the Guadalupana Society. I have served in the offices of President, Vice President, Secretary, and Treasurer. Guadalupanas are a group that prepare the funeral meal for the families. I also serve on the Parish Council, where during my first term I was elected and served as Vice President and have been reelected and still serving. Why do you believe you should be elected? We are a hardworking family that takes great pride in our community, church, and country. It is from this sense of pride that I have always felt a need to improve our great city. My reason for running for mayor is because I envision a better Fort Stockton. My focus on being mayor is that I want to find ways to better improve our city and to serve its citizens. As a bilingual person, I would also be able to connect with our community effectively. Change is needed, and this opinion has been voiced by many. Although I have always tried to be optimistic with the outlook of our community, it has become increasingly obvious that our city has concerns that need to be addressed. My vision is to be successful, and therefore we must develop better communication between city, school, and county to achieve this. We must take time to study and discuss our plans in order for it to become a reality. Jumping into any idea feet first is never a good idea without looking at the complete picture. Being awarded the Blue Ribbon City was something we took great pride in, and we must work together to achieve this again. I believe that by investing in our community's citizens, safety, and infrastructure, we can significantly grow our city and improve the way of life for people in Fort Stockton. And this is why I believe I should be elected the mayor of Fort Stockton. The time has come to make a change. I promise that I will always keep an open-door policy, and I will represent the people of Fort Stockton to the best of my ability. COVID-19 outbreak occurs at Linaw Unit, by Nathan Hewer. COVID-19 cases have reached an all-time low since the start of the pandemic in Pecos County. For the past 6 days, there have been zero active cases in the county, and that number has stayed in single digits since March 9th and below 20 active cases since February 16th. Those numbers are similar to the two prison units in Pecos County until this past week. COVID-19 cases spiked in the Linaw prison in Fort Stockton, and as of April 14th, there were 18 inmates that tested positive for the virus and 3 active cases by employees. There were an additional 18 inmates that are in medical isolation, meaning they were in direct contact with individuals who tested positive for COVID-19. The facility is not in a current lockdown. The other prison in Pecos County, the Fort Stockton unit, has no active cases. This past week, the state provided information regarding vaccination rates by county. Pecos County continues to be on the higher end of vaccination rates in the state, as 35% of residents in the county who are 16 and older have been fully vaccinated. The number of people who are of age to get the shot is currently and have received at least one shot is at 41%. The 35% fully vaccinated translates to 4,273 people who have fully vaccinated that live in the county. CPAR set to hold fundraising event for Animals in Need by Nathan Heuer. Animals have always been close to the heart of Fort Stockton residents, Nicole Bennett and Dennis Gross. But in the past year and a half, the two have teamed together, along with fellow Fort Stockton resident Heather Pass, to save animals, thousands of animals' lives in the Fort Stockton area. In 2015, Bennett started the Cherished Pets Animal Rescue, a local nonprofit 501c3 organization that is dedicated to rescuing abandoned, surrendered, and/or neglected animals, rehabilitating and caring for them until they can find their forever homes, families, and the chance at a new beginning in life. "I have always been an animal lover," Bennett said. "I used to live on a farm. I'm from Georgia. I lived on a farm there, and I lived on a farm with my grandparents." Bennett moved to Texas in 2008 and just moved to Fort Stockton a year and a half ago. Shortly after, his boyfriend, Dennis Gross, became one of Fort Stockton's animal control officers. The couple now works in unison as the animal rescue provides an assortment of supplies to the shelter while the city-owned facility provides a roof over dogs and cats' heads while they wait to be fostered and adopted. Last year proved to be the most successful for the animal rescue, and the shelter gave approximately 1,160 animals their new leases on life. Pass, who is the officer of fundraising for CPAR, said nonprofit organization was able to do so with a tremendous effort by Bennett, Gross, and many others, as well as their connections to shelters across the country. Nicole has dedicated much of her life to rescue and is the mover and shaker of the organization. It is with her connections made throughout the country with other rescues that make our monthly transports possible. Her efforts, combined with the teamwork of various people in our community, make this amazing effort possible. Many thanks to our ACO, Dennis, as well as his partner, Jorge Pinedo, who work tirelessly to keep the community safe, as well as the animals that may be out and about for any number of reasons. While the organization is able to provide a great service to animals in need and the community, it comes at a high price. The average cost of saving a dog or cat, getting its shots, its needs, exams, treatments, food expenses, is $200 to $300 per animal. The high cost intersects with the current issue within the Fort Stockton community of people surrendering their animals at a much higher rate than those fostering, adopting, and donating money. This week alone, there's been 20 surrenders. That number compares to just two adoptions this month, and in any given month, there can be 30 to 50 animals surrendered or found on the streets that need care and ultimately a new home. With transports taking anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks to get in place for animals from when they get taken in, CSPAR is in great need of fosters and donations, as well as individuals to adopt animals. Fosters would be great because I know the shelter is not currently a no-kill shelter, but we've since been running it that way because we are within the 10%. With that being said, once the shelter fills up, there's absolutely no more space. If we can have fosters, once we have gotten their vaccinations and everything taken care of and we know they're healthy, then we can move a dog into foster that opens up a kennel at the shelter. For those unable to foster or adopt due to their living situation or other circumstances, CSPAR is holding a fundraising event next that will give individuals an opportunity to help animals and possibly receive an assortment of goods in return. The first annual Cause for Paws is an event organized by PASS that will be held on May 1st at the Old 76 in Fort Stockton. For this event, many local sponsors and donors are participating. There will be a silent auction from 12 to 4 p.m., showcasing local vendors and individuals as well as sports memorabilia. There will be door prizes throughout the day. The crawfish boil will begin at 4 p.m., and the raffle will start around 7. Pecos County Feed and Supply has graciously donated 2 1-year supplies of of dog food. In addition, we will raffle off a wine basket, including bottles donated by some of our local animal lovers. All proceeds will go to CSPAR, which will be shared with the shelter. Pre-sale tickets for the crawfish boil are $25, which will include one free raffle ticket. Raffle tickets are $10 and available to be purchased at Hunter Real Estate Group and Fort Stockton Insurance. Please contact Heather Pass for any sponsorship inquiries or donations. Any donations outside of the fundraiser can be made in the following ways: Cherished Pets Animal Rescue in Fort Stockton at petrescue@yahoo.com or Venmo at Cherished Pets Animal Rescue. If you are interested in adopting or fostering an animal from the shelter, or would be interested in seeing what animals are available, you can contact the shelter at 432-258-3581.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, April 15th. Recent fires keep first responders busy. The Monahans Volunteer Fire Department was called to a structure fire in the 3600 block of South Boston Street around 11 p.m. Tuesday night. Two water trucks, two pumpers, and two brush trucks responded to the scene. A witness said the fire may have started on the porch of the mobile home owned by Colston Ranches. There were three people in the home, but none were injured. Firemen stayed on site until around 2:30 a.m. Wednesday, and the mobile home was a total loss. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. The Monahans Volunteer Fire Department had a busy day last Thursday as they responded to three fires. The first call was a pickup fire on South Highway 18, about 5 miles south of Monahans, around 3:15 p.m. Damage was minor, and bystanders had the fire largely contained with fire extinguishers by the time the Monahans Fire Department arrived. Fire Chief Randy Crabtree said engines stayed on the scene to make sure there were no flare-ups. Around 7:15, Monahans Volunteer Fire Department received a call for assistance from Wicked Volunteer Fire Department for a vehicle fire 3 miles north of Pio. A tanker and a few firefighters were sent to assist, as Wicked was shorthanded at the time, Crabtree said. The vehicle was a service truck that had a blowout before the fire. The truck was carrying an oxygen and acetylene bottles in a closed compartment. The heat of the fire caused the acetylene bottle to explode, injuring fireman Roy Garcia. He was airlifted to the Lubbock Burn Center and was treated for second and possibly third degree burns. He was released Friday and is recovering at home, according to Crabtree. While still on the first call, another call came in about an 18-wheeler accident on I-20 west of Pio. The Monahans Volunteer Fire Department responded and found the vehicle to be fully involved when they arrived on the scene. The vehicle, hauling frozen hamburger patties, was a total loss. The fire was extinguished, and the DPS took over the scene at that time. Voters meet trustee mayoral candidates. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. A gathering of about 75 local residents took advantage of an opportunity to meet with candidates for mayor of Monahans and Monahans Wicked Pyote ISD Trustee Place 7 on Monday evening at the Ward County Event Center. Candidates present were incumbent Mayor David Cutberth and challenger Adam Steen and Rebecca Kynes, candidate for School Board Trustee Place 7. Incumbent trustee Quint Milius was unable to attend because of employment commitments. Ward County Judge Greg Holly served as moderator. Each candidate was given 2 minutes to introduce themselves to the audience. Rebecca Kynes said she was a native of Monahans and returned 4 years ago. Quote, "I love growing up here and am happy to be back. One of the reasons I am running is the mental health of our students and teachers needs to be a priority in our school district. I think it is important we create a transparent environment where parents, students, and teachers can succeed. I think it's important." End quote. Mayoral candidate Adam Steen also grew up in Monahans and has lived here with the exception of 3 years, working in Fort Worth. Quote, "My goal is to better our community for all residents," end quote. He and his father, Alan, own Adam Electric and own Delaney's Flowers with his wife, Megan. Incumbent Mayor David Cutberth, born in 1955, a graduate of Monahans High School, came back to Monahans in 1981. Quote, "I have always worked and paid my own way," he said. He and brother Henry own 7 businesses in town. Quote, "There are still tremendous opportunities in Monahans," end quote. Questions for the event were based on input Holly received from residents and a few that were presented in writing prior to the meeting. Question: what does a mayor, school board member do, and what qualifies you for that role? Steen, quote, "A mayor should be a good leader, and I have proven myself to be a good leader and a hard worker. We started our business, Adam Electric, 5 years ago in Monahans, and it is doing very well. That has helped me to learn to work with people," end quote. Cutberth, quote, "The mayor has no power except to hold the gavel and break ties with the council. But a mayor should put together coalitions to get things done. Public safety is highest priority," end quote. Kynes, quote, "In running for school board for District 7, I have extensive experience in state and local government. I am also willing to learn and work with others. I am running for this position because I have the time to do it, and I have the time to dedicate to the job what needs to be done to represent our district to the best of our ability. I have the time, and I have the passion to make a difference. I have worked for large cities with responsibility for millions of dollars," end quote. Question: what role should the mayor have in economic development, and what will you do to fulfill that role? Cutberth: by law, the city cannot subsidize business. I have talked with HEB, Walmart, and United Grocery. 30 new stores have been added in the last 5 years. Things are better than 28 years ago. The role of mayor is to be the head cheerleader, end quote. Steen: I will welcome and be open to outsiders and help in any manner that is legal. I have a hard time believing we have that many new stores. Things can be better than it is now. I'll do everything I can to help bring business to town. Question: what can be done on the state of the cemetery and the trash around town? Cutberth: I agree the stickers are a problem. They blow in and are very difficult to control, but we are doing a lot of work to try to get them under control. As for trash, the homeowners need to help by taking pride in the community. Keep trash picked up on your own property and even a couple of more pieces in the alleys. The city does have a code enforcement officer, and citations are issued every month. Steen: get with the county. The ballparks are in great shape. How do they do it? Work with the council to add more ordinances and maybe even another inspector. Question: Mrs. Kynes is advocating changes to the school dress code and has sometimes been contentious. Some are concerned that you may have an agenda focused on a single issue. Please speak to those concerns, and will you be able to work with the board on a broader range of issues? And what other issues are important to you? Kynes: that's not why I am running. I am not running for this position based on my grievance with the school district right now. The reason I am running is because of the issues I've seen since starting that grievance process. As a parent of a student or multiple students, I should never feel like I can't speak to a principal or superintendent or teacher. I believe children should never be threatened or worried about attending school. I can work with other members on any issue. The grievance I filed on dress code is not personal, it's the law. Question: Mrs. Kynes, as a board member of Transformative Learning Academy, is that a conflict of interest? Kynes: Yes, I serve on the TLA board. I do not intend having to choose between either boards if I am elected to the school board. I think I can do both. It is not a conflict of interest. TLA is not in the business of trying to pull students out of the district, so I don't see any conflict of interest being there. Question. Based on campaign slogans, Mayor Mr. Steen's slogan is, "Time for a change." Mr. Cutbert's slogan is, "Don't change what works." Mr. Steen, what needs to change? Mr. Cutbert, what is it that's working and needs to remain the same? Steen, it's time for positive change. The infrastructure on streets is not good. There isn't much on the north side of town. We need more retail business. Cutbert, what is working? We have spent $30 million on infrastructure, the Hog Wilfield, street seal coating every year, improvements to lift stations, and much more, all with no loans and no bond debt. We have been fiscally conservative. Question. School Board. Mrs. Kynes, your slogan is bringing tradition and pride back. What tradition or traditions are you planning to bring back to the school district? Kynes. I feel like our district and community as a whole has lost some of its pride when it comes to our district. Our football stands aren't as full as they used to be. Our basketball stands aren't as full as they used to be. I even feel some of our students aren't even as prideful in being a Lobo as they used to be. Our students are not growing and becoming members of our community like they used to. We have so many new families in our district that are getting lost, who we are not being welcomed with open arms. Question. What is your greatest challenge in fulfilling the office you seek, and how will you overcome that challenge? Kynes. The greatest challenge is perception people have on why I am running for school board. I think I will get past those perceptions by showing people what it is I really want for this community, by showing people the love I have for our district and that I have for our parents and teachers and staff, and this is not just a student issue. Steen, getting people to work with me. Cutbert, working for the betterment of the community. Work together with good relations between the council, school, and county. Question. A closing statement from each candidate. Cutbert. We put an economic development corporation funded with 0.5% sales tax in 1993-94. That was a fight. Selling water to Southwest Sandhills, the city makes money on that and has spurred development to the south. Steen. We don't have enough housing. We want to bring families here. Sales tax revenue in Pecos is 2 to 3 times Monahan's. Why? Andrews has more sales tax revenue. Why? We need to do more with infrastructure. A vote for change is a vote for me. Kynes. I will fight for our district. I will fight for our parents. I will fight for our students. I will fight for our staff or any employee in the district. I am an advocate for all of them. I want all to feel comfortable in our public school district, and I want our students to succeed in all aspects. I want our district to succeed in all aspects. We have great parents. We have great education who all want to be involved. I think it is important we realize we are all on the same team." End quote. First migrant children arrived in Pecos last week. The story was written by Brendan Briggs. Local officials toured the Target Logistics Man Camp in advance of the arrival of the first unaccompanied minors that began to arrive last Monday evening, April 5th. The man camp was converted into an underage migrant holding facility over the past 2 weeks to provide better privacy and security. 7 buses arrived in the late afternoon on Monday to drop off the first 125 children, ages 12 to 17. The converted man camp was initially slated to hold 500, but according to the press release from the town of Pecos City, all 2,000 of the beds are expected to be in use by mid to the end of next month. The children are scheduled to arrive every 2 to 3 days in similar-sized groups. The press release added that, quote, "The town of Pecos City reminds all residents this agreement to house unaccompanied children was directly between Target Logistics and U.S. Department of Health and Human Services," end quote. According to Facilities Director Carla Provost with Endeavors, the company contracted with the HHS to provide for the care and custody of the unaccompanied children until they are unified with an appropriate sponsor. Each child will be screened by on-site medical doctors and staff for COVID. COVID-positive children will be isolated and retested for a negative result before going into a group. A full medical facility is on site for children staffed with medical doctors. She said the children will be both girls and boys and will be segregated into dormitories accordingly. The dorm rooms will house 4 children, with each room having its own bathroom, and be equipped with televisions with Spanish language programming appropriate for the age of the children. A worker will be assigned to every group of 8 children, she said, and a worker will be with the group assigned to them 24/7. The dormitories will also be set up with a common room for the child care worker to monitor activity while inside the dorm buildings, and a worker will be placed outside of each dorm building at all times. The children will have a photo ID with a scanning code to monitor movement as they go into different parts of the facility during the day. Activities are planned for the children throughout the day, along with athletic facilities being set up for use by the children, Provost said. In an interview with a local TV station, Reeves County Sheriff Arturo Granado said after his preliminary tour of the facility, quote, "I think they have everything they need in there. I mean, they're going to get their meals served and cooked there. They have a recreation area where they can get out there and exercise if they want," end quote. Granado told the reporter that his office will not be providing security to the facility unless one of the teens runs away. The HHS contract is paying $750 per child per night for house, food, and security, and is expected to run through the rest of 2021. A similar man camp was converted in the Midland area earlier in March, and an additional man camp is planned to be converted into a temporary holding facility in Kermit. According to a New York Post article from March, U.S. government officials are, quote, "scrambling to find bed space for 15,500 unaccompanied immigrant children who have poured across the southern border in record numbers," end quote. In last Monday's Reeves County Commissioners Court meeting, Reeves County Chief Deputy Ernest Loscano said, quote, "Our main concern is for the safety of our citizens. We will place a dedicated patrol presence in the area. The kids will not be free to go, and if there is an escape, we will respond and coordinate efforts with the feds. Our call volume is still very high, even with the oil field down. There will have to be some overtime pulled, because at the beginning, we will treat this like the worst-case scenario," end quote. Reeves County Judge Leo Hung said, quote, "safety of our citizens is the number one priority. Our second is COVID. We have been doing really well across the county, and I don't want that to change because of this," end quote. U.S. Representative Tony Gonzalez from District 23, Regional District Director Amy Hernandez attended the meeting, answering what questions she could, and said Gonzalez would be traveling to tour the facility once it is up and running. She did add that the children would not be entering the local school system. Hernandez said the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency has set aside $110 million to aid relief organizations, including churches, local governments, and other agencies, to offset the costs imposed by the situation. and a statement released by Gonzalez on March 22nd after photos were released by Axios showing, quote, severely crowded makeshift conditions at temporary facilities at the Donna, Texas temporary facility, Gonzalez said, quote, I have been sounding the alarm for weeks, urging the Biden administration to take this crisis seriously. I hope the photos finally wake them up. I'll continue to urge our administration to give Border Patrol, HHS, and other law enforcement the resources they need to combat this crisis. Otherwise, facilities like these will continue to pop up, and the situation will only deteriorate. We must also be compassionate and treat these children as more than just statistics or examples for a photo. As a father of six, I think every day about the stories I hear from these children when I have visited these facilities that house them. Until the open borders rhetoric stops, these shelters will be prevalent. End quote. Binbo raises funds for the homeless. Having a heart for the homeless comes easy for this 11-year-old Monahans TLA student. In February, Hannah Binbo, daughter of Jeff and Cindy Binbo, presented her classmates with homeless awareness. She talked about the homeless in our community and how students can help. Leading by example, Hannah set up a lemonade stand in the front yard at her house off Kenneth Street. After earning more than $180, Hannah took her money to the newly opened Dollar Tree and purchased enough toiletry items and snacks to make 20 care packages. Inside of each package, there is a handwritten note with various Bible scriptures, quote, so the people will know Jesus loves them, end quote. Hannah Binbo is an active member of the youth activities at First Baptist Church Monahans, where the care packages will be lovingly given to those in need.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.